Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Tom Hardy for the appellant, Ray Longstreet. This case is before Your Honors on a very discreet sentencing issue regarding sufficiency of the evidence, and the issue is basically this. Whether the Court's finding that 12 kilograms of crack cocaine was attributable to Mr. Longstreet was clearly erroneous when it was based solely on a single witness's uncorroborated and inherently self-contradictory testimony regarding the relevant drug sales. And really it comes down to whether the evidence that the district court relied upon for that finding was supported by evidence bearing a sufficient indicia of reliability. It's useful to go back and sort of look at the basic facts that supported the district court's determination that 12 kilograms of crack cocaine were attributable to Mr. Longstreet. Those facts were essentially the testimony of a witness named Anthony Sutton, who was alleged to have been a participant in a conspiracy that involved also Mr. Longstreet, and who the relevant conduct at issue was his sales of crack cocaine over a period of time at a corner at Hamlin in Iowa, in Chicago. And his sales at that corner were alleged to have been, as he said, crack cocaine. The testimony at trial, his testimony ranged over a couple of days, but his testimony about the actual sales at the that corner of Hamlin in Iowa, at least as relevant to the sentencing determination of the district court made with respect to Mr. Longstreet, were that his average sales per day were an ounce and a half, as he said, and also that the relevant period of time over which, or the period of time over which he was selling drugs at Hamlin in Iowa, were some point in time to May of 2005, and that's where the self-contradiction comes in. At various points in his testimony over the couple of days that he testified, Mr. Sutton testified to having started his sales at Hamlin in Iowa in mid-2002, and then also when challenged on cross, he amended that statement to say it was 2003, in fact, mid-2003 when he started. And then finally, when it came back to redirect, he again backtracked and said it was, in fact, 2002. At no point was he asked to explain that contradiction, whether he couldn't remember, or to verify which was, in fact, the correct.
Does it matter? Because the judge started the count at 2004.
The judge did, in fact, start the count at 2004. What the judge did was take that, whatever the period of time was, whether it was 2002 to 2005 or 2003 to 2005, what the judge did was take a snapshot from essentially May 2004, or I'm sorry, June 2004, to May 2005 and say this is the relevant period I'm going to sentence for.
So your client got the benefit of the doubt on the discrepancy?
According to the district court, yes, but the problem with that is that when, and this is sort of the crux of the argument here, is that when you do that, you have an inherent problem because what the judge used to determine what the actual amount of drugs sold during that snapshot was in fact an average that was computed based on the entire span of Mr. Sutton's time selling drugs on the corner of Hamlin and Iowa.
It doesn't matter. He said he sold an ounce and a half a day during the relevant time period, and he overestimated the relevant time period, so the judge gave your client the benefit of the doubt on that discrepancy and started counting at 2004, and if you count an ounce and a half a day from 2004 forward, you get the total, and that's uncontestable and uncontested.
No, in fact, that's not quite what Anthony Sutton said. He was asked to estimate on average what he sold during that period.
Per day.
Of time. I'm sorry?
Per day?
You
gave a daily estimate, right?
A daily
estimate. Not a total for the whole period. You know, your argument would be relevant if he gave a total for the whole period rather than a daily estimate.
But because what you do when you compute an average is you take the entire period.
That's not what he did, though. He said
he
sold an ounce and a half a day.
Right, but the way he must have, it's unclear how he computed that, but the way he must have computed an average.
No. That argument isn't going to get you anywhere. He said he sold an ounce and a half a day. He didn't do a mathematical calculation about the total amount sold over the course of years, whatever it was, and then extrapolate from there. He said, I sold an ounce and a half a day.
Well, the question he was asked by on direct was, what was the average amount you sold? And he said, you know, and it's implicit in his answer, over the period of time, I sold drugs at Hamlin in Iowa. What I sold was an ounce and a half a day.
Right. So he answered the question with the daily estimate. So where that's the case, the court is entitled to use that daily estimate, assuming it's otherwise reliable, and calculate the total from the 2004 date that the court used to account for the discrepancy in the testimony about the start date and move forward from there.
Well, frankly, it's not clear what that daily estimate is based upon, and I think that's the problem. Because
why is there more necessary other than his testimony?
What Mr. Sutton may have done, if I may, is, and this is pure speculation because there was nothing in the record to show what he did to come up with that answer, was take the entire amount of drugs that he sold, that he knew that he sold during that whole entire period, and divide it by the number of days that he knew that he sold
drugs.
There's
no evidence that that's what he did.
There's no evidence that, to the contrary, either. There's no evidence of how.
Well, there's his testimony where he said, I sold an ounce and a half a day on average.
Speculating, and you know, there's follow-up testimony that discusses what, you know, amounts he sold per day, which suggests that in his mind he was calculating monetary amounts.
I don't think it suggests that.
Well, frankly, I think that
he had a daily average, ounce and a half a day.
I mean, frankly, I think that the testimony is less clear than that. I think that what he really said was that over the entire span, he, on average, was selling an ounce and a half a day. That doesn't mean that on any given day he was selling an ounce and a half. And that's really the basic point, is that on any given day, he might have been selling a lot more than that. He might have been selling a lot less. And undoubtedly, that's the case. Because just, you know, our general common sense of how sales work in even a retail context suggests that sales fluctuate over time. And so even if he was selling an ounce and a half a day on one particular day, or even over you know, the entire span of time from 2002 to 2005, that does not necessarily mean that from the period of time, the snapshot that we talked about from 2004 to 2005, that average of an ounce and a half a day necessarily pertains to that snapshot. I think in our briefs we have a table to show that, in fact, you can get an average of an ounce and a half a day using a wide variety of numbers for various points during that period, that larger period, where the snapshot, the period from 2004 to 2005, is a far different number than 1.5 ounces. It might be, you know, it could be anything, really, because there's an infinite number of variations. And, you know, Mr. Sutton never testified about the degree of fluctuation or variation that he experienced in his sales at Hamlin in Iowa. And I think that it's clear that, based on the case law that we cite, that without some further evidence of what, you know, when Judge Kennelly took that snapshot, without some further evidence of exactly what he was selling during that relevant time period from 2004 to 2005, it's really unclear, you know, how the judge could sort of infer that amount of drugs that average amount of drugs, 1.5 kilograms, 1.5 ounces, excuse me, apply to that discrete snapshot. I'm going to reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you, counsel.
Court, Christine Egan on behalf of the United States. The district court did not clearly err when it determined the drug quantity attributable to the defendant because the evidence upon which it based its findings was reliable. The district court had to make a reasonable estimate. Scientific precision is not what's required. The district court understood the task it had at hand, and it did explain how it got there, taking note of defendant's argument that there had not been testimony about an average over the shorter time period used by the court, and specifically additionally explained that it was in fact eliminating quantities of drugs that it did believe defendant was actually responsible for, that in the court's view more than accounted for any potential fluctuation. Thus, the district court's estimate was reasonable. For those reasons and those set forth in our brief, we ask that the court affirm.
Thank you, Ms. Egan. Mr. Hardy?
Your Honors, if I may, just briefly, I'm not going to take up a lot of time, but I think this case bears a lot of similarities to another case that was decided by the Eighth Circuit, Lawrence. And I think, you know, with respect to what the government just stated, but also what I was just arguing, that sort of brings into focus the problem here, which is in Lawrence there was a conspiracy alleged or a drug activity alleged between 1980 and 1988, or 1984 and 1987 against the defendant. The defendant admitted to selling a certain amount of cocaine, 16 ounces, between 1980 and 1988, but had not admitted that he had dealt in cocaine between 1984 and 1987, and in fact had denied that. And for purposes of sentencing for that period, the drug activity between 1984 and 1987, the probation office simply divided that 16 ounces figure over the 8 years that he said he had admitted to selling it, and then just multiplied it by 4 years between 1984 and 1987 to come up with an 8 ounce figure. And in that case, the Eighth Circuit found that that was clearly erroneous because, frankly, there was no evidence to support that during that snapshot period that Mr. Lawrence had actually engaged in that activity and sold that amount of drugs. With respect, I think this is actually that very similar case.
Actually, it's the opposite. That case involved a total over a period of years and a mathematical calculation to arrive at a total for a smaller subset of those years. What we've got here is a daily average testified to, and that daily average is multiplied out over the course of a small time frame to give your client the benefit of the doubt as to the larger time frame that the witness testified to. So it's exactly the opposite kind of a calculation than was at issue in Lawrence.
Well, just to respond, I think it's similar in the sense that, as I discussed earlier, if Mr. Sutton had engaged in an averaging activity, what he was really doing was taking a larger amount and dividing it fractionally by per
day. The problem with that argument is there's no record support for that.
Well, frankly, there's no record to support either side. But with that, I'll conclude and ask that this court reverse and remand for sentencing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hardy. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.